We welcome you to Press Row, a Texax produced podcast with local media, and it is episode number 3 of the 2020 Aggie football edition of the program as we look back on a narrow escape against lowly Vanderbilt by a score of 17-12 Saturday, Kyle Field to kick off the season. And we look ahead to this week's matchup against the number 2 ranked Alabama Crimson Tide in Tuscaloosa. Press Row and all Texax podcasts can be found at texax.com/podcasts. on iTunes or however you choose to access podcasts. I'm Gabe Bach, joined today by Olin Buchanan of TexAgs.com, Robert Cessna of the Bryan College Station Eagle, Mike Lucas, Jersey Mike of KAGS TV locally, and Brent Zwerneman, don't call him Zimmerman, of the Houston Chronicle and various other outlets out there still putting out newspapers. We'll start with Vandy, guys. Let's get into it. But, man, we got to hit that. We got to hit all our storylines, and then we'll close with Bammy right off the top. Who wants to go first? I mean, what did we watch Saturday at Kyle Field?
I said it was like getting a C- on an open book test. And I think it was. I mean, that's a team that you should be much better than athletically. More experience is, and to go out and just play uninspired, made a lot of mistakes. I think it's hard to watch a game like that and feel like this team is as good as, as it's expected to be. But, you know, maybe it was just, I don't know, opening day jitters, or they're just wasn't quite ready yet.
When I went back to watch, just to see what, you know, if I recalled what I had seen in person, and bottom line is, when I went back and watched the game, the Aggies were lucky to win. They got some real breaks late. Otherwise, that game would have gone Vanderbilt's way, and this would be a whole different, you know, you can still talk about a 1-0 15 team going into Alabama. This would have been a whole different conversation today, obviously, with a break here or there for the Commodores. I was completely stunned by the outcome, but I know I wasn't the only one.
No doubt.
It wasn't pretty. It definitely wasn't pretty, but you do have to take solace in winning ugly, and good teams win ugly, even if it's a team you didn't expect to win ugly against. But to Olin's point and what Brent said too, Vandy had some chances late. That Damani Richardson interception, if that's a better ball, that could be a Vanderbilt touchdown. We're looking at a different last 10 minutes of that game. So I think A&M is lucky to have won, but a win's a win, and you'd much rather be 1-0 than 0-1 heading to
Vandy. Jimbo's third year, just no excuse for that. I expected total domination. And the fact that you can say, well, they played well the last 7-8 minutes. You had to wear down one of the worst teams in the SEC home. I was shocked. I really was. I thought easy 30-40-point win. And that being said, we've all seen a lot of ugly wins in our time at A&M, and they followed that up with a good game. I'm not saying they will. It's just that just move on. Put it behind and time to move on, because just no excuse.
Yeah, we saw this under the previous regime. 4 of the 5 of us covered the 2016 Aggie football team, and we saw Shea Patterson in his very first game come in, kind of mess around, and kept it close. They came back big on A&M in the second half, but still kind of sneak out and steal a win. It sort of had that eerie feeling about it. Give the defense a ton of credit for rising up, a couple of big sacks late. The 2 second-half picks, Damani's tip to Leon was probably the play of the game. But, man, you certainly don't want your fourth-year starting quarterback to be outplayed for much of the game, too much of the game, by a true freshman making his first – I mean, this guy camped at A&M, would have killed to be at A&M, and he outplayed Kellen for much of that game.
55 plays on offense, which Jimbo said he'd like it to be between 75 and 85. So that's 25 to 30 or whatever less than what is ideal against Vanderbilt. Now, obviously, number of plays doesn't always tell the story. You know, if you score on your first play multiple times or something like that. But I thought that was pretty indicative, you know, and you say, okay, is his philosophy to run down the clock to keep his defense off the field? And but in this situation, it just didn't seem to work. And, you know, they've got to pick up the pace one way or another. I mean, there's a lot of things that seem to go better when they're moving a little bit faster. And that was certainly an issue. Only 55 plays against Vanderbilt.
You can't use young receivers as an excuse, because if you're a good quarterback, you find ways to make plays. You find ways to get the ball to the receivers. So I was – once again, I used the word shocked or whatever. I thought Kellen Mond would play much better than he did. And I think that I think it was Olin asked the question afterwards that he thought he played not that bad. And I'm saying that's delusional. I mean, you played Vanderbilt. And that's just, to me, was totally unacceptable. You lost the ball twice. Yeah, you could say it wasn't your fault, but you're the quarterback. You've got to take responsibility. And I think to show those young players, he should have said, hey, I sucked. We got to be better than this.
Yeah, he used the term, I was played pretty clean. And obviously that raised a lot of eyebrows across the board, not just in the press box, but
what's dirty look like if you put it on the turf three times in one game, a season's worth of fumbles in just one game against the worst team he'll play?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to crack on him too much, but it does make you wonder if there's a issue with self-awareness. I mean, he did call himself the best quarterback in the SEC last year when Joe Burrow and Jake Fromm and Tua Tagovailoa were around, and I think that opened him up for ridicule. And I think he probably regrets saying that. And then he has a game like you just pointed out. He lost two fumbles and fumbled a third time that basically was a turnover because it was a fourth and one where you would have had a touchdown if you hold on to the ball. To come out and call it clean, I wonder if he really believed that or if he was just being defiant.
You know,
I think you want your quarterback to be confident, though, to an extent. I'm not saying he's right, but I think you'd rather have your signal caller be confident than timid.
Mike, what situation are you talking about?
Being self-aware, but when he said he's the best quarterback in the SEC last year, is he supposed to say,
you're supposed to say, I hope to become the best. I want to be the best. When you've got guys like that, you don't make that proclamation when you've done very little to back it up.
You know, let's stay on Mond because it was, first of all, the turnovers, especially putting it on the turf like that, has become an epidemic in his career. We can go back all kinds of games dating back to his freshman year. But also, just this offense is playing in such a tiny box. And Mike, we'll start with you because I know you did a real deep dive on Kellen's inability to hit receivers down the field.
Yeah, so we went back and we watched all his passing attempts from Vanderbilt, and I think the two things that really stuck out to me from rewatching it and crunching the numbers is they couldn't connect on anything past 10 yards. I mean, Kellen was 3 for 11 on his attempts beyond 10 yards. One of those was to chase Lane across the middle. It was a poorly thrown ball. Lane made a really nice catch on it. Had he led Lane, that could have been an explosive play because it looked like Lane had a crease. And I would assume he's faster than their safety, who was the one on top of him. But their average, the yards traveled per average on attempt was just 9 yards. They were playing in this tiny box, which allowed Vanderbilt to bring extra guys down in the box. It wasn't straight up press coverage, but they were kind of bumping the guys off the line. And A&M couldn't get deep. Mond, he missed a gimme touchdown to Anaya Smith on the wheel route. He overthrew him, and then he underthrew him. Jalen Preston had a chance to break deep a few times. He wasn't really open, but Mond didn't even give him a chance to complete those catches. And he wasn't helped. They had 5 drops, and especially on the first drive, I thought he made a really good throw to Chase Lane on that 3rd and 10. Kind of put it only where Lane can get it. Lane dropped it, and who knows what happens if you pick up a first down on that first drive. Just a momentum changer, you're not 3 and out immediately. At least you get some positive momentum building, but he only averaged 5 yards per completion. You're not going to beat Alabama or the good teams in the SEC if you can't stretch this defense out, any defense out, and Vanderbilt, we all assume, is going to be one of the worst defenses in the conference. If you can't stretch that defense, I'm not sure how you stretch out some of the bigger defense, the better defenses. And then the other thing, real quick, Gabe, I tracked 6 to 7 bad throws from Mond that I'm not a quarterback. I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what's a good throw or a bad throw, but thinks he just overshot, no chance, and he should have been picked off once on top of his 3 fumbles. So he's got to play better. I mean, plain and simple, I think Kellen will be the first to tell you, but
if you gave him truth serum, he'd be the first to tell you. That's the issue, that Dak threw for 450 yards and said he had a stinky game. I mean, that's what leadership looks like. Cease, I mean, he's bringing up great research there, but it's a good point. I mean, A&M's going to lose the next 3 games if he's averaging 5 yards a pop.
Well, once again, is the offense has got to pick it up. That's Jimbo's baby. That's what he does best. And And when you come here and you look what's ahead, the offensive Mike they're going to play in these next 3 weeks, they got to pick it up. And it starts with Mon. It starts with the offense. What's Jimbo going to come out with? Brent touched on about 55 plays. He's a ball control guy, but you know, 24 points ain't going to make it. You got to put some points up in the board. And what confidence do you see with Mon and that receivers from that game? Now, hopefully we'll get around to it, but the running game and the line, you hope they can go in and compete somewhere. But right now you can see why you guys' message boards are probably lit up. There's just not a lot where you feel like, hey man, this team can really go, this is what they're going to do good. What can we say right now that they're going to do good in offense? I don't know. I don't have an answer.
That option looked good early in the game to Kellen.
That was good.
To Anias. And Kellen does have a history of running the football well against Alabama, but he did seem to show some apprehension about taking off and running last week. And then when he did, he fumbled.
So nobody here is probably calling for a win in Tuscaloosa, but while we're on Mon, Brent, make a case for why you feel he has a good opportunity to bounce back this week.
Yeah, Olin just mentioned it. It's my topic in terms of saying a guy who's actually played okay against Alabama the last 3 years, including as a true freshman in 2017, 27-19 at Kyle Field, is Kellen Mond. And I believe it's a situation where his awareness is heightened when it is a team like Alabama and it's that defense. And he is more willing to go ahead and tuck and run at first thought to say, hey, let's go. I mean, he ran for, 98 yards last year? It was 90 last year, 98 the year before against Alabama as the Aggies' leading rusher. Had okay passing numbers. So here's a guy who I think does have his awareness heightened against a defense like Alabama. You saw it in the Texas Bowl. He struggled for three quarters, trying to look like the drop back pro style guy. When it came down to it and they had to win, he took off running and the Aggies won. You know, he had the long run and so forth. So I actually think even after what we saw against Vanderbilt, and you're also talking about a guy here in Kellen who has a ton of experience. The guy has three starts against Alabama, and you're going into a situation where it's not Bryant Denny Stadium from 2 years ago. It's 20% full Bryant Denny, and he's been there before. So I would say if you're going to make a case for Kellen Mond, even after what we saw against Vanderbilt, he's done okay against Alabama, especially in the running game and kind of moving the chains when they weren't expected to at some points against
Alabama. Well, and that's the key to the whole thing, isn't it? Because you get him going in the run game, it opens up even more for – now you got to have to get out of that box and take some shots and soften up that D. Alabama's way too talented to just have him play 15 yards of defense. But at the same time, Mond as a runner added to Spiller and Anias could be a good recipe for success.
I think it's probably the main ingredient in a recipe for success. I think what Brent was kind of touched on is Mond is better when he's just reactive. And sometimes maybe he's trying to, in his mind, okay, what's the right play that coach says I should be making on this play? And when, Alabama's flying around, I guess he's just more reactive. But I do think that does have to be a significant part of the offense. And talking about him using his legs at opportune times for A&M to have really any success. Because I think if you're going to ask him to stay in the pocket, first of all, I don't know that you can trust the offensive line to protect him enough. I think if you're going to throw deep, you got to have him moving. And then he hasn't shown that – I mean, he's not a bad passer. He's just an inconsistent one. We've seen him put the ball in very tight windows, but we've also, like Mike was pointing out, seen him throw erratically at times. So I think you got to look at all the things that he does well and try to use those things that he does well as much as possible.
Oh, and I look forward to him throwing deep to Damon Demas.
Come on,
Saturday.
Who?
Yeah. I think we all would.
Yeah, who?
Sandbag, the ultimate sandbag there, right? keep those guys under wraps.
Yeah, well, there is a theory. There is a theory that maybe Jimbo wanted to keep everything vanilla and not show Alabama too much. But I got a pretty good idea. Nick Saban and his staff knows all about Demond Demas.
Well, the other thing, too, if he
almost vanilla'd himself 0-1.
Yeah. Well, he didn't play at all last year. So the guy hadn't played since, what, November? I don't think they made the playoffs as junior. So November, he hadn't played real football. Maybe that one all-star game where they're just messing around, equivalent to an NBA all-star game. But they're like, I mean, he hadn't played in 20 months, real football. So what do you think the value of getting him reps against Vandy is better than the value of holding him back so that Saban doesn't have any film of him? I would think so.
I like vanilla, but his vanilla was pale. There was not even any white in it. I mean, if that Vanderbilt was just see-through, clear, nothing.
I think you would have been better served to let him play. Of course, I don't know what he looks like in practice, but I do know that I think Mike was saying that when they're completing passes or having to throw pretty short passes and you're not stretching the defense, and this guy apparently can really stretch that defense, so I think you'd have been better served having him out there. But, you know, what do I know?
I think even just the threat of him being on the field, though, I think the defense has to put an extra set of eyes on him just from his reputation alone as a five-star, super athletic kid. And hopefully that, even if he's a decoy, opens up some other intermediate or deep passing route for someone else. And him and Muhammad, yeah, too. I want to see Moose get on the field as well.
Go ahead.
Here's what I thought was going to happen. I thought the Aggies were going to have a big lead early in the second half, and Jimbo was still going to be playing as starters with the ideas, including, when I say starters, guys getting a lot of reps, including Demond Demas, but they would still be in the game with a big lead because they need valuable reps going into Alabama.
No.
None of that.
Cease, as we switch to the other side of the ball, give us your topic.
Well, here's the deal. This is going to be Mike Elko's third year. We all expect a lot out of that defense. And I hate to say it, is after watching the offense struggle so much against Vanderbilt, that defense better be even better if they're going to win some of these big games. And we've all talked about the secondary being improved. Well, this is going to be a real good acid test for them because, you know, Mac Jones, you can say, well, last year he threw those interceptions against Auburn, but he really had some really good games, some good passing numbers. He's got great receivers. You talk about go-to receivers. He opened up with 18 of 24, two touchdowns, 249, high rating. Yeah, you can say it was Missouri, but Missouri's better than Vanderbilt, and it was on the road. And then you can say, well, Alabama gave up two sacks. Yeah. The five-star backup got sacked up twice. They didn't get close to Jones with his receivers. So, once again, is the pressure is going to be on A&M secondary. That pass rush, we're going to get to talk to Clemens a little bit later. If A&M doesn't slow down Alabama a little bit, it could be a really ugly day in Tuscaloosa.
I think we got some pretty good early indicators this defense is much improved. But to Cease's point, when you have Bama, Florida, Mississippi State the next three, and they're scoring points in bunches, it better be darn near elite if you're gonna have to keep these teams in the 30s or in the 20s somehow.
I think
right, you're right.
They're in the teens.
Keep the 30,
the
yeah.
Offensive trend against Vanderbilt.
Mike, go ahead. Mike?
You said 20s, 30s. You might have to keep them in the teens if the offense can't muster up more than 20 points.
They keep it in the teens.
But I agree. It's tough to slow down that Bama team. Mac Jones was the highest graded quarterback in the country according to Pro Football Focus, which just shows you even on a semi-off day for him, he was still as good as it gets. I'm excited to see Jalen Jones match up against these elite receivers for Alabama. I thought he played pretty good in the opening week, even though he got burnt on that touchdown. He was in pretty – almost perfect coverage. It was just an even better ball. So we'll get a chance to see the five-star against some five-star talent on the other end. And if he can hold up, I think A&M's a chance.
But Mike, I'm still hung up on that test that Cease mentioned, the acid test.
I think that was a hang-up on Zoom.
What is the acid
test? Zoom's on acid sometimes. I mean, we get that.
Here's the deal is A&M can't find one go-to receiver. Jones got two, and Waddle and Smith. I mean, those guys have had eight catches each. And, you know, A&M's looking for a receiver. So, Mike Elko, I bet he's losing a little sleep this week.
Tell you what, that pass rush is going to have to be really good, OB. And there were some early indicators that it absolutely could be. Peavy was good. McKinley, the shade tree, man. This guy is just huge. I like that kid a lot, really, his freshman, very first game. Leal, Clemens. We've been waiting on Clemens, Olin. He showed up to the party the other day.
Yeah, it was about time. And it was just in time because, again, A&M was in danger of losing the lead late. And Michael Clemens came up one time. He helped out on a sack. I think it was Leal and McKinley Jackson were both there. And then that last one was just a thing of beauty. But we are talking about two sacks that came in the last, 5 minutes of the game. Where was that the rest of the game? I think there's reason to feel like they're going to be able to get pressure more consistently this year. I don't know if they're going to do it this week with that offensive line. I think Mike Elko's going to have to take some chances and blitz some guys, maybe multiple guys, because as good as A&M's secondary may be and as improved as it may be, with those receivers, if Jones has, 4 or 5, 6 seconds back there to wait, they're going to break open and he's going to find them.
Brent, you concerned or encouraged about the defensive front?
Oh, I was encouraged. Yeah, and Buddy Johnson was making plays all over the place over there, back there, and getting some help from White. And, I've said all along, I think we've all said all along, we expect this defensive line to be a strength, and they certainly looked like it. And that was our first time to visit with Michael Clemens up close. It's still by Zoom, but just to kind of see him in street clothes. And he's an impressive-looking dude. You finally kind of see what – all the players have talked about with him, and if he keeps making plays, the NFL guys have got to be salivating as well, as much as I am right now.
They look got to be first off the bus guy. There's no doubt. He's that kind of guy. And some of those guys never show up to the party, Olin, but this guy did. He has in his last two games.
Yeah, that's what I looked like before I got sick.
Pre-COVID, Olin.
But he definitely looks the part. He definitely.
Michael Clemens, one arm's the size of me.
He definitely looked the part and he played the part. And you know what? Last year he was okay against the run. He just didn't show up in the pass rush the way we always thought he would. So I was kind of thinking that it might be one of those deals where he plays on first and second down and Tyree Johnson comes in on third, who's, closed the season pretty well last year, rushed the passer. But Clemens, the way he came on, you just hope that that's kind of a preview of what his season's going to be like. Because like Brent said, if he puts some production to go with that potential and that physique, he could be a pretty high draft choice.
Olin's the first guy out of the Uber.
Olin's like,
well, the back. Tim Gabriel. Yeah. Uber. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, my gosh.
But it's usually the car's still rolling while I'm being pushed out.
That's why we call him Rolling Olin. The Leal, Damani, Richardson combo. I mean, I'd take Miles Garrett and Justin Evans right now over these guys because one was the number one pick and one was a second rounder, and we don't know what these guys are going to come into but other than Garrett and Justin Evans, because I think Evans was better than Armani Watts and Donovan Wilson. But other than that, I mean, you got to go way back. You guys, Brent, I don't know, Olin, when you first got here, like a Sam Adams, Patrick Bates combo, this is a really good defensive line safety combination here with these two guys.
Yeah, Sam Adams and Bates even predates me because Bates was gone. But it was Sam Adams and Junior White. I was covering them. So that's how long it's been. I think obviously Miles and Evans would kind of set the gold standard for that kind of combination. But this looks like it could be, has a chance to be special. I thought Damani Richardson was probably the most important the most impressive guy on the A&M defense last week.
Brent, Ty Warren and
Cease is going to drop it. I said Cease is going to drop a Garthton Naple Pat Thomas.
You know what? They're going to have to beat somebody better than Vanderbilt before I get too pumped up about them.
Ty Warren and Terrence Kill, a first and a second rounder. But these two guys that got something special, Damani and DeMarvin, I figured DeBrent's going to change his name at some point along the way if they keep it up.
Does Warneman?
You know, I have
– does he like more –
I have a niece. Her name is Denise, and I have a nephew. His name is DeNephew.
Saw that one coming.
All right, so hey, let's think about Bama there. Then, guys. Let's go around the horn. Wait, Olin, we got your big key too. Your topic before we get going.
Well, just from remembering last year, at some point, and maybe often, A&M's going to have to punt, and when that happens, you just cannot punt the ball. To Jalen Waddle and just take your chances. I think if I was talking to Constantino, I'd say, look, aim for the sidelines. And if it's only a 35 yard punt with no return, we're going to call it a win, because we all saw what Waddle did last.
We had Alan Waddell on the radio show today. That's the problem.
That's right. And we saw what he did last.
They are very similar.
Well, they're both from down that part of Texas. So, he had four returns, and they were all, 15 yards or more, and they all set up Alabama with a short field, and that offense is good enough on its own. You sure don't want to give them the ball on your side of the 50 consistently. So, I think you got to do whatever you can to take him as a punt return threat out of the equation.
Ruggs had a long kickoff return too. Don't remember, the yardage was pretty even between the two. It was the punt returns particularly, but also they had a couple long kickoff returns. So once again, once a year we bring out, who's responsible for the special teams. Let's hope we're not talking about that next week, because we were talking about it this week.
Mike?
If you're going to beat Bama, you need everything to go right in your favor. You can't give them anything. You can't have dumb penalties. You need Nick Saban's contact lens to dry out a little early. You need Jalen Waddle to wake up with a little sniffle. Anything you can do to get those guys off their game is crucial. And with Waddle being back there, I think Jimbo might be a little more aggressive than he usually is on fourth downs, especially near the middle of the field. I don't know if punting is a viable option in this game. With how dangerous he is, if you can't pin them deep, and Jimbo, I know he's an old school coach, he doesn't tend to go for it often on fourth down, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him gamble a little more with his offense just because of the threat Waddle poses.
You'd take 35-yard average and Waddle zero returns and take it to the bank right now, no question.
Oh, you cash that check immediately.
Hey, we talked about Mond, and everything, and some other deficiencies. Special teams were atrocious against Vanderbilt. You had some horrible mistakes. And I Smith bringing a punt out of the end zone. First of all, he shouldn't be doing that. Second of all, Brian George threw the ball in the back. Then returning a kick deep in the end zone. Then Anaya Smith diving to catch a punt. What is going on there? They've got to get that stuff cleaned up if they're going to have any hope. They're hoping to play some close games against some tough teams. And that could mean the difference if they don't get their special teams act.
It almost meant the difference last week.
Boy, two guys, Chase Lane and Anaya Smith, both from Houston, Waddle from Houston, they know exactly who the nation's best punt returner is. Olin calls him this generation's Rocket Ismail. They know it. They're going to try to match wits with him and prove that they're just as good. They got to be able to take their layups. I mean, if he hits a home run, take a walk, right? I mean, first and 10 from the 25 is not the worst thing in the world, even if he does house call one. But that's where you kind of worry about a little bit, as they try to kind of match him toe for toe.
Yeah, I think Anias is one of those guys that is so good that he thinks, the quarterback that they always say, he throws a lot of interceptions because he's so good that he always thinks he can, put the ball in the ridiculously small window, right? And so, and I think he's the return man equivalent of that.
Of Nick Starkle.
Well, no, I said so good.
I'm just kidding.
I was talking about, that there are times when a fair catcher just letting it go is the right thing to do. And I guess that's the next thing he has to learn.
I was trying to talk at the Starkle apologists who say, Nick throws a lot of picks because he's He's got that big old arm, right? No, I don't think so. All right, so give us a big key, like a guy you're really watching in this game, a key, A&M figures out a way to make this a second-half game, and you just never know if blank. Mike, we'll start with you.
Well, I think mine's the obvious one, but I'll go with Spiller. I think what we saw in 8 carries last week was impressive. He did not perform well in the big games last year, and he talked about that earlier this offseason as something he worked on was, hey, I know I need to perform better in the bigger games if A&M's going to pull off some of these upsets. It's tough to get in a rhythm with 8 carries. I think Spiller did a really good job against Vanderbilt making the most of that, and I'll be interested to see how early Jimbo goes to him. I'm not sure if Anais got so many – carries early to keep Spiller fresher for the second half and maybe Bama looking ahead. But I think if A&M's going to win, they're going to have to control the ball. And a lot of that comes down to keeping that Bama offense on the sidelines because Spiller is having a good day running the rock.
I'm taking Anais Smith for some of those same reasons, because I think they shut Spiller down last year. They'll try to do the same this year. We don't know, even know who the wide receivers are going to be. We don't know if Muhammad and Demas is going to get the whole way to Tuscaloosa or stop at Meridian. So I'm going to take somebody that I know is going to play, and they're going to need 3 or 4 plays. So maybe even Anais Smith in a slot coming out of the backfield. They're going to have to get some big offensive plays from somebody. So I'm picking Smith.
Sounds like a man who spent a night or two in Meridian, as has Brent. What's your thought?
I'll tell you the guy I'm going to be keeping an eye on, and that's Alabama's version of the 12th man in terms of saying, what is that setting going to be like? Because do I think Texas A&M would have beaten Vanderbilt 17-12 with 102,000 rabid Aggies in there? I really don't. I think it would have been a little bit different. I think it is kind of an equalizer what's going on. Now, there were 25,000 Aggies on hand, and they were loud and so forth, but I do think that makes a difference, and now the Aggies get to benefit from that setting of going into Bryant-Denny Stadium. And I'm not saying that's going to make it a bunch easier for him or anything. Obviously, Alabama's loaded with 5 stars and all those things. But I do think it could make a little bit of a difference. And I'm curious to see what that's going to be like for the Aggies on the road.
Brent's predicting an A&M victory. I can feel it. Olin, what's your thought?
Okay, first of all, we all know, you know, Kellen is key. And I don't mean to just hammer the running element so much, but – we know Alabama doesn't lose SEC, you know, conference games often. When they have, very often, the opposing quarterback, whether it's Johnny Manziel or Nick Marshall or Joe Burrow, even Jarrett Stidham, has either run extremely well or extremely effectively. I'd even say Bo Wallace ran effectively in one of those wins. So that's something. But beyond Kellen and beyond the running game, or maybe the running game just the other side, big game needed, again, from Buddy Johnson. Alabama likes to run. They run effectively every time, or almost 6 out of 7 times that they've beaten A&M. They've had a running back over 100 yards. Buddy's going to have to be filling holes. I think he's going to have to take on Najee Harris and be able to at least get a stalemate in the hole and not get run over. So I think Buddy Johnson is a real key figure in this game.
Mon's obviously got to be the lights out. I think he's got to get over 100. I think he's got to hit 3 balls over 30 yards somehow, some way in this football game. It's not been his strength in his A&M career. That's got to change. Defense has got to prove they're elite. They've got an opportunity now. Like, hey, how do you prove you're an elite defense? Go out there against the elite offenses and hold them to a stalemate and win the battle. Win the battle. Elko is one of the best defensive coordinators in all of college football. He gets another opportunity to prove that. On Saturday, it's going to be fun. It's on CBS Coast to Coast. Be a lot of previewing on the Eagle at KAGS, of course, at Houston Chronicle, right here on TexAGS.com, on the radio show as well. And then in-game coverage, post-game stuff, wall-to-wall, covering this football team, win or lose. It's going to be a very interesting storyline as you continue moving forward in this early gauntlet of the 2020 new schedule. For Brent Zwerneman, Mike Lucas, for Olin Buchanan, Robert Sesna, I'm Gabe Bach. It is the Press Row Podcast. Find us on iTunes, texags.com/podcast. We appreciate it. We'll be back to wrap up Bama and look ahead to Florida coming to Kyle Field next week on the show.